better off. Hello, Pod of Their Own listeners. Welcome to episode 12. We already have a dozen episodes. Hooray! Next week will be a baker's dozen. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined, as I am most weeks, by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison. And now I want donuts. So yeah. Thank you for getting us off on the donut craving foot tonight.
Yeah, you put that in our head.
It was kind of on the brain, not donuts specifically, but the idea of a baker's dozen was kind of on the brain because I just picked up bagels yesterday because I was visiting my parents in New Jersey and I always bring home bagels to freeze.
For a second, I just had to make sure that you said you picked up bagels the other day. I just want to be like, you picked them up from Baltimore or you picked them up from here? You tell me where.
New Jersey. No.
The correct place for bagels. Understood.
The correct place. And that's like the one thing. I mean, they're like decent bagels here, but they're not as good. And I miss them always. And so whenever I visit my parents, I always freeze them and bring them home. But soon I won't have to do that anymore because I will be back in the land of delicious bagels and pizza pretty soon.
Although I did hear that there's like a mythical French toast bagels somewhere in the city that like sells out.
Oh yeah, no, that was like right near my old neighborhood in Williamsburg, and I will totally send you the address later because it's delicious.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
It sounds amazing.
Panera has one, and it's like the one bagel I eat from Panera because it's like nothing. Like, I mean, like, you know, it's basically dessert. It's like they call it like a cinnamon crunch bagel. Oh my god, it's so good! And I eat it with like maple walnut cream cheese. Yo, that's the stuff, man.
Yeah, this one, if you put it in the toaster, it will like caramelize a little, and then some butter will just sort of seep. Like, I'm not usually a butter on bagel person, but this is absolutely where it belongs.
Yeah,
we should probably put like a content warning on this, like warning, you might get hungry listening.
Content warning, we haven't said a single word about the Mets, but we have talked about food.
Speaking of stress eating, the Mets.
Yes. Yeah, we need to talk about food because talking about the Mets is too upsetting.
Like, I legit had like a big piece of pie after the game last night.
I need pie.
I had a big piece of pie, like, but not for the game. Just because.
Linda, I remember you being like, I need cookies.
So what kind of pie?
Cherry.
Cherry pie is so good.
I had peanut butter pie. But again, I didn't stay up for the end of the game. So.
Well, because I went downstairs.
The correct thing to do.
Yeah. I went downstairs, opened the fridge. I'm like, oh, there's a pie. I'm like, okay. It was a piece that you could kind of make into two, but when I cut it, I'm like, that seems small. So I'll just finish the pie.
You wouldn't want it to go bad in there. Then it wouldn't get to fulfill its destiny.
I mean, exactly. Cutting the pie in half is like maybe a one or two run loss. This was a whole piece of pie loss.
So. Yeah. And I had to recap it, too. Yeah. So aww. I deserve that full pie.
This was a wake up at 6:30 in the morning, roll over and look at my phone, and what the hell happened?
Bad stuff, Maggie. It was bad. Yeah. It was quite bad. So
everything bad.
I mean, mostly, so, I mean, Zach Wheeler didn't pitch very well again. He's
10 hits.
10
yeah,
hits.
Yeah, I caught the Wheeler being, at best, mediocre.
Yeah, he's managing the runs okay. Like, he's not letting the innings like completely balloon on him, but his whip is starting to rise very rapidly. Because he's just giving up base runners every inning now. I mean, for the past few starts.
Trade him, super fast right now.
The defense was so bad yesterday.
Didn't do him any favors.
No. Just like,
and he's so vulnerable to bad defense because his kind of get out of jail free card is that double play that he's really good at at generating those double plays, but they have to be turned behind him. And this being the Mets, more often than not, they are not turned.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't get any outs at all behind him. And it's he has to dig down and find it when he doesn't have it. But also, like, the Mets just can't seem to take advantage of the strengths that he does have, and that's not a great combination.
It's not good. I mean, like, when you're so heavily reliant on your pitching staff as being your strength, especially your starting pitching, like putting such a poor defense behind them seems pretty ill-advised, but, you know.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive.
It is. And, like, I understand the argument that there are fewer balls in play now than ever, and so teams are starting to kind of punt on defense, and the Mets pretty much did that to, like, bolster their offense a little bit. And that, in that aspect, it has worked. They're pretty good at scoring runs, for the most part, at least much better than the 2018 iteration of the Mets. But, you know, it, like, there are times when it comes back to bite you in the butt, like it did yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Although, to be fair, they weren't winning that game
winning that game anyway. Drew Gagnon came in and just put gasoline on that fire.
Yeah.
Well, they have an outfield full of infielders. They have Rosario, who God only knows what's going on with him. But I feel like one of the underrated defensive issues right now is Wilson Ramos, who was, we knew coming into all this that, he's not a defensive catcher. That's not what you're going to get from him. But it's gotten worse. And at his age, it's going to be a long couple years behind the plate. Like, this is, we're sort of in this now and just kind of have to get through to the other side. But it's going to be ugly.
And it's the fundamentals, just catching the ball. He can't catch the ball.
Yeah. Like, he's a million years old and he doesn't have any knees.
Knees.
No knees.
Like, forget about throwing out base runners. Like, just catch the ball.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you can explain away with the lack of balls in play. You can explain away that for everybody else, but that doesn't factor into catcher defense. You can't explain away catcher defense with that. Like, but yeah, it's the biggest issue right now, though, by far, is the bullpen. Drew Gagnon.
What bullpen?
Yeah, we don't have a bullpen. One of those. Drew Gagnon came in, lit gasoline on the fire, gave up like four runs or something like that in one inning. And
yeah, it was four. No, it was four runs in an inning and a third. Because I remember recapping this.
An inning and a third.
Familia was three runs in a third of an inning.
And then we all said in the Slack immediately, he's getting cut. And guess what happened? He got cut.
Well, then even I said, just did IL Familia with a phantom injury. I don't know if it's phantom, but
I think it's
something that if that's actually the injury that he's dealing with, and the Mets signed him with it he was diagnosed with it like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Woof. Yikes. Big hashtag yikes.
Because that's like, yeah, exactly. Because like on the surface, like in a vacuum, when you look at the relievers in a similar tier to Familia and what they got across the league free agent signing wise, like the Familia deal doesn't look that bad. But when you factor that in and the fact that Familia got 3 years, whereas some of these dudes only got two, oof, that is rough times. And
they jumped on the market too.
Yeah, they signed him right away.
It was right away, yeah.
Because he's a guy that's familiar to the clubhouse. That's exactly, they like their guys, and this time it's not benefiting them at all. His ERA is like 8 now, and so it got to the point where I don't know if he's in pain or not. I don't know how much this injury is affecting him. I mean, I believe that this is like a real thing he has.
Yeah.
I just don't know if how much it's actually like impacting his performance, but it's gotten to the point where they need to do something, and rather than just be like, you should go to the minors and work on this, they're like,
I don't think they can do anyway,
right? No. They're like, we'll put you on the injured list so that you could go to the minors and work on this. It's really not good. So in response what happened?
Pete Group Dong.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to win this game, she said stupidly. Never mind. Forget it. I didn't say anything.
Group Dong alert.
Polar Bear at it again.
Finally hitting Julio Teheran for once. That's nice. That's nice. Even if, like,
they didn't hit him last year when he was garbage, but this year he's on it and now they're killed. Well, actually, did they just, like, single-handedly spiral his ERA? I think it was below three at the start of this game.
It was
like almost 3.5 now.
Gare was saying, they never hit him well, they're batting like 170 against him coming into this game.
Yeah, they basically raised his ERA by a half a run.
Oh, nice.
in these four innings. So,
woof. Well,
bummer.
Cool.
Sorry.
Hate to see it.
Yeah. Oh, it breaks. Yeah. My heart bleeds.
What a shame.
But legit, you know who my heart bleeds for? Like, not in the sarcastic form, is Brandon Nimmo.
I know.
I am so sad for Brandon Nimmo because, like, okay, so if anyone has not read the news who's listening, he has been shut down for a month of no baseball activity whatsoever, which means that if he's coming back at all this season, he's probably a minimum of 2 months away.
Yeah.
And his neck is fucked up. Like, who knows what the future holds for him at all after this? It's like a scary situation, and it just breaks a heart because, like, man, is there a guy on the planet who loves baseball as much as Brandon Nimmo? I don't think so.
Yeah. No, I was saying the other day in Amazing Avenue Slack that if there's any proof that there is no God, it's the fact that we've been robbed of Brandon Nimmo's smile. Like,
and his joy.
Like, come on, man. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's gone to the point where it's like, you know, it's one thing when the Mets' mismanagement of injuries, like, screws with the roster and screws with the team's ability to win. But it's another thing when you're potentially ruining these guys' careers. This is, like, a career affecting. I'm not going to say career ending because we don't know that by any stretch of the imagination. But, like, this could affect the entire course of his career because the Mets forced him to play through this.
And even if it doesn't have effects that linger beyond this season, we're still talking about this kid losing basically a full season of his physical peak because the Mets let him play 6 weeks with a busted neck. And, like, you could see that he wasn't his usual self. And yeah. It boggles the mind that they wouldn't have been more careful. I mean, I know it sounds silly even saying it because this is the Mets we're talking about. And someone was saying on Twitter, like, oh, we don't know what happened. He might have wanted to play himself. Like, it could have been misdiagnosed. Like, all of this is potentially true. But what have the Mets done in the last 5 years or 10 years or ever to earn the benefit of that doubt? Like, nothing. Really?
Nothing.
This is a story we've heard so many times from them now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just me, but, like, I'm scared of, like, a David Wright situation here, especially so I'm hoping that's not the case, that, you know, with rest, maybe, because I think even Mickey Callaway said they're still not looking at surgery, but again, that means nothing.
Well, Mickey Callaway said it. Well, then.
Yeah.
Mickey Callaway literally said 10 minutes before they put Jerry's Familia on the injured list that he wasn't injured.
Yeah.
I think they didn't inform him of their phantom IL stint. That's another thing about the Mets. This is, like, classic miscommunication stuff.
They don't talk to each other.
Like, it was literally, like, Mickey Callaway's out here giving the press conference, like, and everybody's like, is Jerry's Familia injured? Like, what's up with him? And he's like, you know, we're monitoring him day to day. He seems fine. Stuff seems fine. You know, we're going to keep monitoring him every day and checking in all the time. Like, literally 10 minutes later. Oh, God.
Oh, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, and even though the Mets, like, even though they haven't had, like, the worst luck they could possibly have with injuries this year, it's still, like, the same Mets shit, like, with Nimmo, and now we've got Justin Wilson, again, had a setback. Like, he had elbow, like, tightness, and so he mm-hmm. was pulled from his rehab stint. And, like, Jeff Wilpon was present in Syracuse for, like, all these rehab stints. It was, like, Wilson and
Cano
and Nimmo, like, all rehabbing at once, and Jeff Wilpon just, like, showed up, and it's, like, all of a sudden, like, evil devil voodoo descended. Like,
I imagine it being kind of like this blue and orange smoke that sort of envelops them.
And, oh, like, the lost
and, like, absorbs
monster
into their injuries.
Like, it's like, and, you know, like, Jeff Wilpon and the Mets, like, clearly have this organization-wide philosophy of, like, we need to get these guys back from the injured list, rub some dirt in it.
Rub some dirt on it.
The team is scuffling.
Yeah, we're paying them.
The team is scuffling. We need you guys back now.
Man
and
up.
So, you know, like, we might not see Brandon Nimmo this season at all. We might not see Justin Wilson again this season. Like, it's, you know...
Oof. Jed Lowry may or may not exist.
Yeah, like
the jury is still out.
And, like, they're being purposefully very elusive about the exact nature of these things. Like with Brandon Nimmo, it took them a long time to even admit that he had this disc problem in the first place. And now all they're saying is he's shut down, he's having another epidural, but they're not like actually talking about the state of the injury itself and like what it is. And they never said anything about like what Justin Wilson's injury really is. They are very, very, you know, behind closed doors about all this stuff. And it's like, well, really frustrating.
And if it was the one who said he had a bulging disc, because they kept saying it's inflammation. And then Nimmo's like, no, I actually have a bulging disc. Like, so if Nimmo had never said anything,
we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
It's one thing if they want to like have a general policy of erring on the side of privacy or like waiting until things are finalized before giving information and starting out with something a little more vague, but that's not it at all. They say what they think it is, and then they contradict themselves 8 times, and then they say it's nothing at all, and then it goes back to the first thing, and then it's a bulging disc.
Yeah. I saw somebody on Twitter said they should just go to the hockey terminology and just say upper body injury.
Lower body injury.
So you can't be wrong.
That's essentially what they've been doing with Jed Lowrie at this point, because they talked about
lower body injury.
Yeah, they talked about the capsule strain, and then they said like while he was rehabbing, because he was having knee issues, that translated to like a hamstring issue, and now they're just calling it like lower body left side kinetic chain, and you're just like, what the hell? Okay, what? I can't. But yeah, I mean. And we've got the Syndergaard issue now, which is sort of all interconnected with all of this, because we've had so many issues with the bullpen. Like, Mickey Callaway is forced to push his pitchers beyond what they should be going, and then you get issues like what Syndergaard had on Saturday.
Well, another thing was... I'm getting 2016 flashbacks there, too. Like, he's coming back, says I'm fine, and now I'm just waiting for a worse injury.
Well, proof the thing me with Syndergaard, too, is that he did not have a lot of injuries in his professional career. And then I know somebody was talking about this on Twitter. I should be citing them. Please at me and yell at me, and I will tweet if you were the one who I was reading saying this. But like, ever since he made a big deal about bulking up that offseason, adding on 20 pounds of muscle or whatever it was, lo and behold, he's pulling hammies like it's going out of style. Like, that's, don't add 20 pounds of muscle if you're a really good pitcher. Like, just do the thing that you're already doing. And a lot of these guys bulk up like crazy and then get all these soft tissue injuries like this, because it's not necessarily a healthy body type. But
Cespedes was having the same training program, basically. So, yeah, maybe don't train like bodybuilders when you're baseball players, but that's just a thought. From this not professional person, I don't know. So, you know, Syndergaard was out there doing agility drills under the watchful eyes of everyone, you know, like Jeff Wilpon's smoke descending on the field as Syndergaard does agility drills, insisting he's only missing one start, insisting that Jason Vargas is not missing his next start.
It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah, a flesh wound. Not quite dead. But yeah, so now we do need one spot start at least this week. And so it's kind of, you look around at the options and you're once again like flashbacks to earlier in the season when we had a couple pitchers sidelined.
Walker Lockett, come on down.
Yeah, Walker Lockett, come on down. Yeah, so we've got Wilmer Font, who, you know, had a good performance out of the bullpen in his most recent outing against the Cardinals. We ultimately lost that game because Chris Flexen, relief pitcher,
did not have a good performance coming out of the bullpen.
I mean, the velocity bump that the Mets claimed that Chris Flexen was getting was there. Like, he was throwing 97, like they said, out of the bullpen, airing it out for one inning as opposed to being long relief or starting pitcher. That was certainly true, but he still gave up a home run to Paul DeJong, of all people, because, as always, it's Paul DeJong. You know, but Wilmer Font did, prior to that, Wilmer Font pitched 3 scoreless innings and looked pretty good, so I guess he gets the start now? They've got Irvin Santana hanging around in the minors, they've got...
Which I completely forgot about until this exact moment.
That's a thing, that's a thing that is true.
I think I wrote his, like, the news post for Amazing Avenue about him, and still my brain just erased him from existence.
It's a thing.
At least as a mess.
Is he on the 40 man?
Irvin Santana? No.
No.
And I don't think Walker Lockett is either.
The 40 man is just 75 different injured relievers.
Right? Yeah. The 40 man is merely a construct. We do now have...
Maybe the 40 man was the friends we made along the way.
Yeah. We do now have a full... I am aware now that we have a full 40 man roster at this moment, because we did add... When Drew Gagnon was optioned and Familia was put on the injured list, they brought up Daniel Zamora, who was already on the 40 man, but then they added Steven Nogosek. I think is how you pronounce that. Nogosek.
That's better than I would have been able to do.
Yeah,
he was a relief pitcher that we got in the Addison Reed trade, one of the three relief pitchers that we got from the Red Sox.
He's the last one standing, isn't he?
Basically, yeah, that we haven't, like,
used. I think he's the last of all of that crowd that Sandy brought in over that
Ryder
season.
Ryan has not yet seen the major leagues either.
Ooh,
in that was series
he
of trades.
Duda?
Yeah, did he have
Jay Bruce?
Did he have,
I think
TJ?
Oh, Bruce.
Ryder
did
Ryan,
Ryder
no,
Ryan have TJ, that was, or was someone
that was Drew Smith?
That's the one. I can't keep track of all these failed prospects.
Yeah, it's
that
it's
look
not
exactly
good.
The same and pitch exactly the same, and which is to say, not at all.
Not
and
good.
The problem is like we like none of these trades have really worked out. We'll see how Steven Nogosek. Damn it. We'll see how Steven Nogosek does. Like, maybe he's good. I don't know. People who know more than I do about these things are telling me in Amazing Avenue Slack that, you know, they're not enthused. He didn't pitch well in the minors prior to this season, but this season, since being promoted to Syracuse, he has not allowed a run since being promoted in his 12 innings of work. So, you know, he's pitching well of late, so we'll see what he's got. As far as I know, he seems like very much the same as many of these other relievers we saw, you know, a fringe guy with control issues.
Yeah. Well, I think I saw a stat saying he's walking like 4.8 batters or something.
Yeah, he's walking a lot of guys. He's doing well with the run prevention, but he's walking a lot of guys. So we'll see what happens.
That's troubling.
So we have, those are the two guys that have cycled back up now. That we have on our team again now. We have Zamora again, and then we have our first look at Nogosek.
Have we gotten any updates on Avila? Did he just
no.
depart too?
Yeah, like again, we have no idea. He may never pitch again. Who the
it's
heck
time
knows?
Time for our special, special new segment, Maggie Googles It.
Like, that was the...
Feel like... Were you 50 pitches or something in an inning, and then was never seen again.
Yep, we're using
3 weeks ago, he resumed throwing.
Cool.
3 weeks ago, and there's been no update?
Nope.
Not really finding anything else.
Fab.
Yeah.
Not what you want.
What you want.
No.
Yeah, so a bullpen with, you know, Nogosek... Chris Flexen, Drew Gagnon, just like we drew it up, folks. you know, it's a problem. Our pitching depth is not good, and we knew this going into the season, and we could have fixed it fairly easily, and we didn't. So, here we are.
No, but they had Santiago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Santiago was an improvement to the roster. I will continue to make improvements to the roster, like purchasing Hector Santiago's contract.
And you know, amazingly, he just improved the roster again by leaving it.
And then promptly designating him for assignment. So yeah, it's rough right
God.
Now. We dropped out.
Sorry.
Oh God, what is happening?
On SNY, they showed the colonial guy in the booth with them, and underneath they put time traveler.
That's amazing. I love how the internet has made this a thing now.
Who is it?
Oh, they said his name. Oh.
He's a statistician for the Braves, I think.
Yeah, he is. He's a stats guy. And
I didn't even know they had statisticians in the 1700s. Actually, no, they did
Kevin.
Have a lot of statisticians.
Yes, I
think
you're right.
It is Kevin, but I can't
remember. I cannot possibly believe his name is Kevin.
It apparently
it has to be John. The only name it could possibly be is John.
Yeah. John Quincy Adams.
To the best of my ability to Google, which is second to none, Luis Avilan has not existed on this plane in the last 3 weeks. There we go.
Yeah, that's what happens when you use your lefty specialist for multi-inning outings. Cool.
So efficient.
Yeah. Just like Jim Henderson. I think I even called him this year's Jim Henderson. Like a week,
yeah,
like,
he basically is. Yeah. But yeah,
another name I had completely forgotten until this exact moment. So thanks for that.
So, you know, things are going okay in this current game that we're playing, but we had a demoralizing first game against the Braves after dropping 3 out of 4 to the Cardinals in like a really, really demoralizing fashion. And
the one that they did pick up was not pretty.
No, it was an ugly win. Maggie and I were present. More on that later. But it was an ugly win. But I'll take it. But it was not pretty. But yeah, this is like a really, you know, this is a make or break part of the schedule, which is, you know, why we're having this culture of like every game's a must win game, because we have a stretch now against a bunch of good teams and a bunch of in division teams. We have two series against the Braves and Phillies coming up, and we have a series away against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. So this is kind of a part of the schedule that will easily sink them if they can't, you know, at least maintain where they are. If they can't at least be close to 500 by the end of this stretch, they kind of will be buried pretty much by this part of the schedule. So,
well, and it's certainly a part of the schedule that if they were so inclined to 2015 themselves into something, this is where that could happen as well. So,
yep.
Let's see.
We shall
I know where
see.
I'm putting my money.
They had their team meeting today now, Maggie. That's going to fix everything.
Yeah, it's true. And they had it even without my tweeting that there was a, what was it? Closed door team meeting threat level update. I didn't even get to do my closed door team meeting threat level update at all. So
yeah,
they beat me to it.
And not only is this a make or break schedule for the team, I think it's a part of the schedule for the team. I think it's a make or break part of the schedule for Mickey Callaway's job.
Sure yeah. is.
I think if they come out of this essentially buried in the division, I think he doesn't last the road trip, basically. So we'll see. Hopefully the Mets pull something off. They finally did hit Julio Teheran for once, so hopefully that's the start of something good and they can get back on a good swing again. They have the offensive capability, and even with Syndergaard missing the one start, hopefully just the one, they do have the starting pitching capability to go on a run. It's just a question of how far can they get with this beleaguered bullpen.
Especially now that Jason Vargas is eating his Wheaties.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, we were wrong, Jason. We were all wrong.
We're very sorry.
Probably.
Yes.
We are all Vargy girls now in a Vargy world, shall we say.
I don't know how I feel about this.
Embrace it. So on that note, we are going to take a break. And when we get back, we will talk about a segment that's been brewing for a while, which is online harassment that women and non-men generally face online. So stay tuned. And we are back. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This week, we are discussing online harassment, which is obviously not a new topic, but I think it's something that's worth having a discussion about. So last week, about a week and a half ago now, I tweeted out and reached out to, you know, the baseball Twitterverse, and asked people to contact me, with their experiences with online harassment. Basically, I asked if you are a woman, a trans person, a non-binary person, basically any not man, not cis man, please reach out to me, and tell me about your experience. And let me just say, I once again, kind of like with the accessibility segment we did a few weeks ago, I am so overwhelmed with all the responses I got and how responsive people were to this. So thank you so, so much to everyone that reached out to me to share your experience. We on the pod are so deeply grateful for you guys trusting us with this information, because we know these things aren't easy to talk about. They're really traumatic sometimes, and it's really upsetting. So thank you so, so much for sharing these things. And yeah, a quick content warning is that, you know, there might be some nasty language on this segment because people are not nice online. Newsflash. Being a woman online runs the risk of being mocked, denigrated, harassed, or sometimes even threatened for just having opinions about sports. And it's worse if you're not a cishet person or if you're not white. I am lucky enough to be both those things, but many people are not. And so, you know, it's really rough when you're a woman online and you tweet things and people call you ugly and people call you dumb and people say all sorts of things that have nothing to do with the opinion itself and just want to attack you, the person, instead of the opinion. I'm sure that you guys have plenty to contribute to this too. But yeah, I've had plenty of experience with this, so.
Well, and certainly, I mean, just because I know this is probably going to come up in future conversations about this, is that, yes, men are the, you know, targets of hateful language and dismissiveness. Like, men are not immune from online harassment. But there are a couple of factors, one of which is just the sheer volume. And another is, you know, quite the realisticness of a potential personal harm being done. And I think just recontextualizes what non-men go through in a way that I think is just important to keep in mind. And, you know, hashtag not all men, of course, but like just putting it out there initially that, like, yes, we know that men sometimes get harassed. This is not about them.
Well, and also I feel like this goes back to our first, or one of our first, where we talked about Susan Waldman not being accepted. It's still that same mentality, like, you don't belong here. Like, you're kind of infringing on our territory. Like, they could even totally agree with your opinion, but because it's you who said it, then it becomes a problem. So then, and then, you know, with Twitter, with Facebook, with all these things, people seek out like-minded people. So then it becomes a mob that, like, there's a certain culture on Twitter that you say the wrong thing and everybody gangs up on you. Like, one retweet and you're done. Like, you've got to mute your mentions, you've got to take a break. So it's a mob mentality almost, and they create their own little environment just because of one thing that they didn't agree with.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is such a good point also, because it, you know, one person you can mute, two people you can mute or block. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are positives and negatives to both muting and blocking. There are a lot of, you know, kind of dogmatists who think you should be doing one or the other specifically, but everyone has their preferences. But there's a point where it becomes a deluge, and the effect is to basically drive you offline, and it can work because it's just, to log in and have to comb through dozens and dozens of the grossest, most stomach-churning things you can read, like, that's going to drive people offline for a stretch. And that's the goal. And, like,
yeah, it
sucks that it's a successful tactic, but it is. And I don't think we shouldn't pretend otherwise. You know, there's a lot of well-intentioned people will talk about, like, not letting them get to you and, you know, just block and move on and, you know, don't let them win. But it's really not that easy.
Exactly. No. Exactly. Especially, like, you know, like, I dealt with this a lot. Like, I didn't deal with that sort of response a lot when I was dealing with online harassment specifically, but I have dealt with that sort of response when I vented my frustrations about being a woman in science, and issues I've dealt with in my graduate program. It's always, you know, from older men, just tough it out. It's supposed to be hard. You know, you can get through it. It's like, you know, like, I can, but that doesn't mean that I like it or that it's easy or that, like, I'm not gonna need to, like, take a break or, you know, things like that. And just telling people that you can just tough it out. It's like, you don't know what it's like to move through the world as me, you know? Like,
no.
it's easy for you to say. And
Linda, the idea that, like, it's hard, it's supposed to be hard, well, then why make it harder? Like,
right.
Like, yeah. That's not better.
No. And Linda, the point that you brought up about all it takes is one retweet is an excellent, you know, segue to one of the specific stories that I got sent to me. Is, you know, a trans woman named Dahlia messaged me, and she said, she gave me specific permission to use her name. So disclaimer, anytime that I use someone's name, they've given me permission to use their name. If they have not given me permission, I'm not going to use any identifying information when referring to them. But Dahlia messaged me and said, you know, last year when Trevor Bauer was harassing people on Twitter for days on end, I criticized him and he made fun of my icon at the time that featured a girl smoking. It was like, well, smoking is bad or something dumb like that. Anyway, tons of his followers harassed me for like 3 days and I eventually had to lock my account over it. So all it takes is one prominent person with lots of followers to retweet, quote tweet, or even reply to something that you've tweeted. And it's like a deluge. Like they, like the followers come in masses and they just gang on and gang on and gang on. It's like the Barstool effect. Like that's exactly how Barstool mm-hmm. operates. Barstool is a huge purveyor of online harassment of women, and other non cishet white dudes online. And they just basically sic their massive following on anyone who has an opinion they don't like. And mostly it's an attack on the way they look, on who they are, and not an attack on said opinion. And it becomes so overwhelming that people have to lock their accounts or people have to just step away for a while. And it does, you know, it's exactly what Maggie said. Like, you know, it does the intended consequence of chasing people away that they don't like. And it's unfortunate, but you cannot blame these people for not wanting to stay online after that, you know?
Yeah, people have been targeted by harassment. You do what you need to like stay sane in the face of being told terrible things about you. Like if what you need to do is go private or log off or quit Twitter entirely, that's, you know, that's something that we should trust people that they are doing what they need to do and not guilt them for it and not, you know, use it as evidence that they are somehow weak. It is, mm-hmm. it's really a very personal choice. And I don't blame anybody who wants out permanently or otherwise of the Twitter cesspool.
Exactly. You know, it's also, I mean, this is different. But John Oliver had Monica Lewinsky on his show and it was about public shaming. And she said she felt she got the brunt of it and like, and Bill Clinton got off scot-free. Like, this isn't a political thing. I'm just saying this is how she felt. And she said, but for her, because he asked her, do you feel like it would have been worse if Twitter was around back then? And she said, for her, it's actually kind of better now because she hears voices of support. And she goes, and that would have made all the difference in the world to me if somebody said, what you're going through is horrible. So there is another side to it. Like if you see somebody being harassed, make sure you say, back them up or say, do you need to talk? Or, you know, make sure that they do hear the other side, that the world isn't all just piling on all the time.
And that's
even
that's
if it's in same. A DM, even if yeah. it's in the DM, it can mean a lot at the right moment.
Right. Exactly. Even if it's in a DM, I have used that tactic before, DMing people to tell them like, I'm here, I see you, because that is sometimes even better than doing it in public, because sometimes, you know, it's very easy when you are not a marginalized person to step into a conversation and sort of like, you know, take the wheel and say like, and white knight the thing and say like, mm-hmm. you know, oh, don't harass this woman. I, the man, am here to save her. Like, instead, like this, in this instance where I did it, it was a conversation between a woman of color and a white woman. And the white woman was being very dismissive of the woman of color's experience. And instead of, you know, me, another white woman, stepping into the conversation and again, doing more to drown out her voice, I DM'd her and I said, listen, it's not my place to say anything in this conversation because I'm not a woman of color and I do not experience this. But I just want to say that I'm reading this and learning from it and I appreciate your emotional labor. That's all it mm-hmm. takes, you know? And she was very grateful for it because, you know, and I am grateful when people do these things for me because, you know, sometimes it feels like especially when you're knee deep in one of these instances where like it's a tidal wave of harassment, like you just feel so overwhelmed and small and alone. And that's what they want you to feel. And so just reaching out to someone, even if it's in a really small way, to just be like, I see you and I'm really sorry you're going through this. It could mean a huge difference for someone going through it.
For me personally, kind of the last time I really experienced a like tidal wave of online bullshit was right after the Mets reacquired Jose Reyes. And I made the choice to be fairly vocal in my feelings about that. And many other people made the choice to be very vocal about my feelings. And it really did feel good to have people reaching out and offering their support, because there are times when you just sort of feel like you're drowning. And, you know, and my experiences have not been as extreme as a lot of people's, but, you know, that also triggered the first, to my knowledge, the only incident of this, though I have blocked everybody involved, so who knows what they're saying about me, of something, I think the other, besides kind of the deluge effect of like just plain old pushing someone off of Twitter just through sheer volume, there's also, I feel like, one of the other sides of things is harassment that can or feels like it can bleed into real life. So whether that's like doxing or threats. And for me, what came right after I was really outspoken about Reyes, was someone just, I mean, a known troll, accusing me of child abuse, of harming my kid singular at the time. And that, you know, that just sort of, I kind of felt like frozen after that. Like, you don't really know. I still kind of don't know what to say about it, because it's just like the worst thing any human has said to me, like in the world. And like, I'm sure there are people saying, you shouldn't give them that power over you. And it's like, okay, but that's my life. That's my children. You know, I had to like, talk about to my husband about like, what do we do if someone like calls CPS? Like, are, you know, we should be ready for that conversation. And like, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't really know where I'm going with this line, because it's just like, it's just one of those things that I sort of have like semi-processed and moved on from, because no good can come of that. But like, it's terrible. Like, it's, and there, and like, people have had, like, I know I'm not the only woman in sports whose kids have been targeted. And certainly, you know, it can be taken up another level with doxing and with like items being sent to the home and other really kind of personal, live, real consequences. Okay, well, it's just online. It's not. Yeah. Like, Google your name and the word address and see what comes up. Like, it can be pretty frightening to realize just how close people who hate you are to you. And like, sports especially, because guess what? If I'm at a game and they're at a game, we're both at the game. So it's kind of one of those things that's always just in the background of like, what could happen in life from this?
Yeah. And a perfect example, you know, a similar vein of someone, you know, daring to speak out against an abuser and dealing with this sort of backlash is a recent example that goes back to the Addison Russell conversation that we've been having on this podcast a lot. So Cheryl Rings, a writer at Fangraphs, actually, I think she just announced recently that she is leaving Fangraphs and going to Beyond the Box Score. So congratulations to Cheryl for making that.
Yeah, I think she put up her first Beyond the Box Score article today, and it's really exciting. So she's a great follow. We tweeted about her on our Follow Friday of this past week. So definitely dig into those tweet archives from A Pod of Their Own, because there's some good stuff there.
Yeah. So while Cheryl was still at Fangraphs back in May, while this whole Addison Russell situation was going on, while they were, you know, thinking about activating him and everything, she was a person that dared speak out about, and this was a report she received anonymously from a Chicago, you know, a person in the Chicago media. She dared speak out about the fact that the Cubs were actively trying to suppress negative press coverage of Addison Russell. And she tweeted about that. And she got massive, massive backlash for it, to the point where she had to lock her account and like completely go dark for a while. And she wrote a really harrowing piece for All Heels on Deck. I highly recommend you check it out. We will link it in the show post. I obviously can't, we don't have time today to cover all of it, but if you want to read about her experience, please, please do so, because it's, you know, it's harrowing to read. But yeah, basically it's, you know, it's a lot of the stuff that Maggie talked about, and it's a lot of different stuff because Cheryl is transgender. And she got a lot of, you know, like, transphobic bullshit after that, just people targeting her for being transgender instead of, you know, taking issue with the actual issue at hand. And she said that she spent lots of time crying, and people sent her death threats, and it was just terrifying for her. So these are real things that can seep into real life. And to go back to the point about that you made earlier, Linda, about Monica Lewinsky versus Bill Clinton, and the difference between, you know, how they were treated, like, Cheryl wasn't the only one to report about this. Cishet men like Mike Gianella and others confirmed her report, and they did not get nearly the backlash online that she got. Like what she received was a million times worse. And so that just goes to show that it's, you know, it's not just about what you say, it's about who the person, who the messenger is that's saying it.
And it's definitely an area where we see intersectionality at play.
Yes, absolutely. So to sort of, you know, go down my list of stories that I've received, because I want to make sure I get everyone a little bit of airtime. Liz, formerly of The Good Fight, now at Yahoo, reached out to me too and talked about how she got a ton of shit for stuff that she's written. One specifically that she referenced was, you know, she wrote about, so Mike Schmidt, beloved former Philly, made a really ill-advised joke, hard to even call it a joke because it's not very funny, on the Phillies broadcast, referencing the Me Too movement. So he said, you know, I've got a dishwasher at home, actually, my wife. And then, like, people kind of reacted like, and then he said, I do the dishes, actually, but where's the Me Too movement on that? And so it's like, Jesus Christ. So obviously Liz wrote about how problematic that was. And she got a ton of backlash for it, shockingly. Because again, as is the case with Russell, as is the case with Reyes, as is the case with Mike Schmidt, people will compulsively defend their beloved players at the expense of people they fail to see are actual human beings behind that keyboard.
And the First Amendment right that they will defend Mike Schmidt to have, that he can say whatever he wants, that, of course, doesn't ever seem to extend to women who feel that it is worthy of criticism.
Well, and your First Amendment right just gives you the right to say something. It doesn't give you the right to not sound like an asshole, though. Like, I can still call you an asshole because you are one. But, like, you know, and going back to what you said, Allison, about how, you know, we don't all have the same life experiences. Like, I don't know what it's like to be transgender, and I don't want to, you know, put myself in, like, Cheryl's shoes or whatever. But, you know, but then it's always like, it's like, let's say, you know, it was me, and then saying, oh, you know, it's fine, Cheryl, just block them or whatever. Like, you can't ever know what's really going through somebody's mind, and belittling them makes it 10 times worse. Yeah. So you can't, like, you can't just wave off this stuff either. And when you do see something like that, like a stupid joke like that, you that piles up too. Even if it is just, you know, an offhand comment, it's so many offhand comments. It's a culture that's building up. And if we don't call out him, then, you know, just because he's Mike Schmidt, you know, you're letting the culture continue. And this breeds more and more. And the online, it goes from real world until online. And online, it can be worse because they can hide behind their keyboards. So you have to, you know, not, I don't want to say be vigilant, but, you know, you can't just wave it all off either.
Yeah, you have, like, especially like what Maggie was talking about, when it involves your real life and your family, you have no choice but to take these threats seriously. Like, you can say, don't let it get to you, but it's not just you that's being affected. When it bleeds into your real life, you have no choice but to think that this person actually might want to kill you or actually might want to harm your family. Like, or, you know?
Or Google you to see where you are. Or,
to see where you live.
You know? Like, yeah, like, even, you know, that kind of bleeds into, you know, like, online dating. Now, so many people go that route, but it can be terrifying for a woman. It's you don't really know what scary. You're walking into. Yeah.
It's really scary. I basically am always telling my roommate, like, I did a few dating apps for a while. It wasn't for me. I kind of quit them after a while, but, and it wasn't because I had any, like, super, super negative experiences or anything like that. But I would tell my roommate where I was going. I'd be like, here's the restaurant I'm going to. If I'm not home by X time, like, please text me and see, like, if I'm okay.
Yeah, make sure I made it home, you know, double check. Like, I don't think men don't get that, you know, these are the precautions we have to take every day, pretty much.
Yeah. And this like, is a good transition to another story that I heard, which, you know, and this talks about the spectrum of abuse, right? Like, you can go from, you can, at the one extreme end, you can have doxing and threats. But on the other end of the spectrum, you can have, like, you know, these everyday microaggressions that may not seem bad, but they add up. And when you report things to Twitter and Twitter decides it's not harassment, it's like, oh, so I don't matter. One woman messaged me saying that she got a few tweets after, like, Trey Turner's old tweet surfaced. She's an Nats fan, so she was outspoken about that after Trey Turner's old tweet surfaced, that, you know, were deemed by Twitter to not be abusive, even though, like, guys were calling her toots and, like, you know, being demeaning toward her. And one guy said that she was probably just jealous because she called Marlon's man's mermaids. I don't know if you guys know about Marlon's man. He has these, like, mermaids. Yes. It's, like, really sexist and gross. But yeah, she called that gross, and, like, they were saying that she was just jealous of them, which is, like, bizarre. And so we went on to talk about that, like, even though these don't cross over the line to, like, doxing, threats, things like that, but we went on to have a conversation about, like, it's important to reveal how pervasive this stuff is in our everyday lives. Like, even when it doesn't cross the line into these extreme situations of harassment, we still get these, like, little demeaning responses every single day to stuff we say.
And Twitter's approach to this whole situation is deeply problematic. You know, they're very inconsistent with how they enforce their own rules. Even something that does actively violate the rules, they are very affected by how many reports there are. So if you report something and nobody else, then that may not get any attention, which means that in order to get something addressed by Twitter, sometimes you have to kind of elevate that message to your followers, which is not always something you want to do, and it can be embarrassing, it can be uncomfortable. It also means that when there are kind of little clusters of trolls, and this is something I don't see quite as much in sports, but it comes up a lot in, like, in more political, there's kind of little clusters of alt-right users who will like mass report innocuous tweets and get the person account locked. But there's plenty of stuff that straight up does not violate their terms of service. Like, there is no rule that is violated when somebody says that I abuse my kids. Like, that's not something that Twitter deems to be a problem. So it's kind of exacerbated. The culture is exacerbated by a system that is not particularly interested in policing itself.
Yeah, there are no safeguards in place for when something can have real world implications. And then there's always when something does happen, like, oh, well, we'll look into it, and, you know, we're looking at our policies, but what really changes?
Yeah. It's the problem is that, you know, these social media companies haven't exactly been good about this stuff, and online is just so difficult to police. And so it's just basically the Wild West out there. And we kind of all have to fend for ourselves. And it's, you know, really, really hard, like Maggie said, when you want something actually done about a problematic individual, oftentimes you have to, like, do a tweet that's like, hey, this person's harassing me. Could you guys all report this person? But then, like, that just opens you up to more harassment when you do that.
Yep.
So yep. It's like, it's a double-edged sword. And when you open Pandora's box, it can't be closed again often. And so, you know, it's not great. But yeah, going back to the issue of doxing, I had two different people message me that had experiences with this. So I had a trans woman who's a baseball fan message me saying that she unfortunately has oodles of experience with this stuff, especially in the sport of cycling. So they've been targeted by TERFs and transphobes for advocating for topics of inclusion within cycling for trans people. Like she said, I feel like that's sort of just what happens. As far as baseball goes, largely I keep my mouth shut now. And she said, to ensure the safety of myself and others, I filed a police report so I wouldn't get swatted after I was doxxed. And so, you know, this goes to show that, like, the point that we made earlier about these people are changing their online behavior because of this. And they're forced to sort of not speak out about things they would normally speak out about. So for this person, they just decided to stop speaking out about baseball entirely because they just felt like it wasn't worth the aggravation. And who can blame them, you know?
Yeah, that's sad. Like, you're losing a perspective that way. And, you know, they might see something that, you know, we wouldn't see, or they have a different perspective than we have. And, you know, that's the feel that they can't use their voice. Like, I just find that heartbreaking.
And these are already voices that we don't have enough of.
Don't have, yeah.
You know, and this happened to be this person, the day that this person DM'd me about this, and we were DMing back and forth. This happened to be the same day as the 7-line calendar stuff went down. And I don't want to sidetrack this segment and go into a whole segment about that, because that could be a whole separate segment, and maybe it will be, who knows. But it was the same day as that controversy was happening. Baseball, basically the 7-line used to have a calendar of a bunch of women, scantily clad women, and that is very male gazy and gross. And they took it away for a while, and they decided that they might want to bring it back. And so, you know, it caused this whole debate to rear its head again. And so, like, I was participating in the debate, trying to get them to see, like, what the issue is with it. And this person who was DMing me was also participating in that debate a little bit. And, like, like, you know, we were being dismissed over and over again. And she DM'd me again, like, see, this is why why us folks pretty much just don't speak up about sports anymore. Because, like, it's not.
I mean, I'll say I got involved in a conversation about that. I mean, I'm doing the math. It had to have been 5 years ago. And, not getting into the conversation now because it was a deeply unpleasant experience that brought a lot of people my way who, you know, did not have my best interest in mind. And yeah, like, I'm not, that's not a conversation, at least, you know, maybe I'll have that conversation with y'all. I don't know yet. But like, yeah, that's an example of just where the harassment was absolutely not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, and this is, you know, something that, and I'm not trying to characterize the whole group, but this is something that they've had issues with in the past.
There's certainly a streak within that group.
A Barstool-esque vibe, I called it yesterday. in not all, not even the majority, I would say, but, you know, a very vocal and active minority in that group that harass women online. And it's basically why I stopped associating with them and going to their outings. And it's a shame, because I think that the concept is so good. I think their clothes are good. And again, maybe we'll have a whole separate segment about this someday, but it's a shame that, you know, this Barstool-esque mob mentality just troll everyone and go into their, you know, mentions just to give them a hard time and make them feel unsafe is really, really unfortunate. and it, not much is being done about it. Like, obviously, you know, the powers that be aren't participating in it, but they're not necessarily denouncing it heartily enough either. is the issue. And so it keeps going on.
Well, and also there's the others, men, who were saying, oh, if the women want to do it, it's fine. It's up to the women to choose. But it's like, if the women are telling you it's a problem, it's not up to you to decide whether it's right or wrong. Like, don't get involved in this conversation, because there were quite a few women who had a big problem with it and who were saying what the issues were, and they were just like, no, you should leave it up to the woman to decide. But like, just
I am
out
a woman. I am deciding.
Yes. Yes. And I'm telling you why it's bad.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's frustrating. It's, yeah. And it's these things too. It's not just, you know, the open like harassment and comments about my looks and things like that. It's the like having like any concern that I have about things that are problematic, like dismissed out of hand that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. So to wrap up the like stories from other folks, I kind of saved the doozy for last. So another story I got from someone about the issue of doxing, and this is probably the like scariest story that I got, and it was something else, let me just tell you. So this woman's a queer woman baseball fan, and she talked to me about something that happened to her last summer. She was in a Facebook group with a few thousand different members about baseball strategy. She said that she just wanted to, like, learn more about the strategy and the, like, sabermetrics about baseball. And this was, like, strictly a, like, strategy sabermetric community. And so discussions of social topics in baseball were actively discouraged within this group. Basically, like, keep your politics out of my sports, which is a problematic attitude for many reasons that we won't get into today.
Allow me to introduce you to all of sports
that exist within a society that we can't separate them from, no matter how much you would like to. I'm sorry. So she, you know, pushed back against that attitude, and like, she wasn't being openly political to like stumping for candidates in her Facebook group, but she basically made a post about like the declining number of black managers in baseball and got like really like harassing responses. She got responses that were like highly sexist, extremely homophobic. She got called a rainbow tape bullshitter, social justice warrior, which is something we hear all the time pejoratively, dumb fuck, all sorts of other like nasty names. So in response, because she was just sick of it, she was like, I don't have to put up with this. She left the group, which you can do. It's a Facebook group, you can just leave. So she was like, screw this, I'm gone.
And this is what many people would tell one to do, like, oh, the group is bothering you, leave the group. Well, she did it.
She left the group. So again, like, that is a voice that is now lost in that group, mm-hmm. an important voice that's now lost in that group, like a group that's probably full of like older cis white dudes. Now doesn't have her there, but she left, which is well within her right, obviously. But she kept being added back to it by the moderators. Like, she would try to leave and the moderators would keep adding her back. And so like people from the group started like leaking into her actual profile instead of just harassing her in the group. They like would like make comments on her profile pictures and like make comments on like her other photos and things like that. And so finally she like left the group. There's like a leave the group permanently option. So she did that. And the moderator started DMing her on Facebook personally about and sending her like all sorts of messages like, I don't know why you're leaving, and saying like how she's, quote, a beautiful girl and would make a wonderful wife, that he doesn't know what would make somebody a homosexual, that he knew a guy once who was gay, and the last time he called the guy to told him to leave him alone. And, like, it's just like he went on like a huge rant to her about like how he doesn't know why she's gay and she'd make a great wife. Like, what the
oh
hell?
My God.
Crazy
well,
stuff.
Something that's really scary with something like that also is that if someone is so unhinged as to talk like that to someone else, like, you don't know what's going to be next. Like, it's very different to say mean things as opposed to like hurting someone, but like, how is she supposed to know that she's not going to end up as a headline or a statistic? Like, right. This guy has already proven himself to be unhinged. You know, that's a scary situation to be in, because you don't know what's coming next.
And clearly he didn't respect boundaries either. Like, she left. Get the hint.
Right. And this is the moderator of this Facebook group. Like, such as like a random member. This is the moderator of the group doing
this
to her. And so it escalated further. like she like didn't return his messages. So he, and exactly what we were alluding to earlier, he Googled her, he found her personal phone number, he called her and left a voicemail on her phone. And she sent me the audio of the voicemail, and it is creepy as hell, you guys. It is creepy as hell. I'm obviously not gonna play it or anything like that, but it's very creepy. It's gross. It's like, and it's clearly the ramblings of a completely unhinged man, because it's more of the same that she got like on the DM about like how she's beautiful and she shouldn't be hurt. Like, I'm sorry, people are harassing you in the group for being gay, but I don't really understand that lifestyle. And it's clearly that this is just like an older boomer that doesn't understand anything and like is just rambling. Like it is like a 4-minute voicemail. It's wild. It's so creepy and gross. And I was like, I can't believe this happened to you. I am so sorry. And like, this is unfortunately not very unusual. This is not very unusual. This happens to folks a lot. And it's scary. It's terrifying.
Well, I just want to shout out, he's in the minors right now, but he's a great Twitter follower, Kieran Lovegrove. But I think he's still in the minors for the Giants.
Yeah, he's in the Giants organization.
Yeah, and his pinned tweet, he said somebody didn't believe that women get harassed. So he asked women to show him, you know, screenshots or whatever, and there's a whole thread.
Yeah, go in there and take a look. It's illuminating.
I was going to say, you would not believe the responses he got. And it's not just baseball, it's everywhere. But yeah, it's pretty systemic. It's pretty pervasive. It's everywhere. You can't avoid it. And yes, it does happen.
Yeah. And the more prominent you are, the worse it is. Like, the more Twitter followers you have, the more prominent your job is in the world of sports, the worse it is. So other folks who reached out to me, who like didn't share specific stories with me, but were just like, hey, hi, me, I've dealt with this. And I just want to shout them out. Include Jen Mac Ramos, who's at Baseball Prospectus. They have dealt with a lot of issues with this. And Julie DeCaro, which you should totally, if you have not seen it, and we will link it in the show post and the tweets, you should check out Julie DeCaro and Sarah Spain did a video where basically men who, not actors, but like, real men, but not men who wrote these tweets, just like men off the street, basically, like men that they hired for the video, read mean tweets back to them that were written, like real tweets that were written about them. And it's really difficult to watch because A, the tweets are disgusting, obviously, and awful. And B, like, I think it's the best part about the video is because the women obviously have seen these tweets, so they know what they say. The men hadn't seen the tweets ahead of time, so they don't know how truly disgusting they are. And seeing like these men react to the tweets and like being like not being able to look in their eyes as they read them and not being able to like barely even being able to get it out, it just goes to show that, like, you know, these are things that you would have a lot of trouble saying to someone's face.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really good video. I mean, it's awful, but it's a really like brilliantly put together piece.
Like, and I think the best
really,
demonstration.
Really
of
proud
this.
Of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. And I commend them for like doing this because like they have to hear these nasty things said to them out loud that they've read on their computers, and then they have to live it again out loud to their face. And I know that Julie is in tears at one point because it's just, I would be. It's like,
yeah,
you know, these things are disgusting that they say to them. And yet the men are having a lot of trouble reading it. Like, they, like, multiple of them are like, do I really have to read this? Like, it's like, yeah, because these are real things
you do.
That people have said. And so it's good. It's a good exercise because these men, like, it's a good message to, you know, cishet dudes that, you know, these things happen, they're pervasive, and, you know, don't act this way. And so, yeah, and Christina Carl as well is a huge voice on this. She's dealt with a lot of issues. She's trans as well and has dealt with a lot of harassment. She's co-founder of Baseball Prospectus and is currently an editor at ESPN. So she's another good follow on Twitter, so you should follow her. that is, you know, this is a huge issue. And it's, I think that it's important to have these conversations to help people who don't deal with this on a routine basis realize how pervasive it is on a day-to-day basis, and how these range from, you know, everyday sort of microaggressions and dismissing our opinions as not valid to comments on our looks, manipulating our profile pictures, saving them and like doing nasty things to them, to calling us names, to threats and doxing and escalating into real life harassment. So, yeah. Any final thoughts on either of your parts about this?
I would just say, if you're kind of feeling like you don't really know what to do with all this information, you know, if you're someone who hasn't really experienced this, then kind of what I would say is, like, believe people when they tell you what they go through and how it makes them feel. Just accept it at face value. Don't say like, well, have you tried, blah, blah, blah. Like, believe women and trans people, anyone who's feeling harassed, like, trust that that is their legitimate feeling, and reach out to them. If you see someone getting piled on, message them, ask them, you know, sometimes people would like another person to weigh in publicly. So ask them if they would like you to do that, and just tell them that it sucks and that you hate seeing it and you wish it didn't happen. 'Cause sometimes that is just something you need to hear.
Yeah, I mean, we can't say it enough. Just the support, the you know, reaching out, just even just have being there to let some of them vent, you know, that can make all the difference in the world, is to get it out, like, you know, maybe not even online, but say, hey, want to meet for coffee or something. If you know the person and if their DMs are okay with being open, like, sometimes even that, like, overstepping a lot can make a woman feel very uncomfortable too. So, but, you know, just saying, hey, you know, my DMs are open. If you ever want to talk, I'm here. That's the most important thing, is so that nobody feels like they're alone and have to deal with this by themselves.
Right. Yeah. I echo those sentiments completely, because the one time, and I alluded to it last week, so I'm not going to go through the whole story again, especially since we're running low on time, but, the one time that I really dealt with the peak of this, and it's not nearly as bad as what other people have had to go through, but the first time I like really experienced this in at like the scale of like many, many people doing it to me at once, like, I would have broke down crying if not for, you know, the amazing Avenue Slack and like the community of baseball fans that I have, that I know are good people, that are my friends, like you two, everybody else. Like, I would have like lost my shit, basically, because it was just so awful. Like, that was the only thing keeping me from just like quitting Twitter for like a week. But yeah, so it's just having a community of folks that are supportive is super important. And keep in mind that if this is a marginalized person that's dealing with this, it's even more important for them to have a community where they feel safe. And the more they get chased away from these online communities, the worse it is for them, because all they're trying to do is just be able to like share the thing that they love with other people in a safe place. That shouldn't be too much to ask. It shouldn't.
No,
it simply shouldn't.
We all love baseball. We all, you know, we're all going through stuff, you know. You never know what somebody's going through too.
Right.
So just, there's no need to pile on or belittle somebody. Like, we're all dealing with stuff. We're all trying to get through this together. We're all, you know, trying to escape, watch a baseball game. So why be a jerk about it? Just because somebody looks different. Exactly.
It's very easy to disagree with people online and have a serious discussion about that disagreement without being an asshole. Very easy.
Sure is.
So don't be an asshole.
That's what it comes down to.
That's the message of this segment. Don't be an asshole. So when we get back, as always, we will close things out on a much happier note with walk-off wins. So stay tuned for that. Okay. For the final segment of this week, as we always do, we will end things with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. So kind of like Linda and I did that one time, Maggie and I have a joint walk-off win this week, which is that, and we alluded to it earlier, that we were both present at the game on Saturday, and that's because it was Baseball Prospectus Day at Citi Field on Saturday. So a bunch of folks over at Baseball Prospectus, they do these events at multiple ballparks every year. And Saturday was the event at Citi Field for the Mets. It was just a bunch of our friends over at BP and a bunch of our friends at Amazing Avenue were there too. And it's just a nice time to be able to hang out with our online community friends in real life and chat about baseball and see a game together. And I had a really great time.
Yeah, it's a really it's just a good group of folks, you know, talk about not being an asshole. Like, it's just a very interesting and supportive, and, you know, there's some pretty significant disagreements that will occur in the community of giant baseball nerds, but it is a group that much less frequently than other communities seems to be struck with the asshole gene. But aside from it just being a great group of people, and it was also just a fantastic game.
It was a terrible game.
But it was terribly really played baseball. Fun, and we got to see an enormous group dong from Pete, which I think is still, I am fairly confident, is the hardest hit home run I've seen in person ever.
I agree. It's the most gargantuan home run I've ever seen in person. It smacked off wild. The upper deck in Citi Field, which I have never seen.
They called it 458 feet, and I disagree.
I think it's further.
I've only seen opposing PMP players hit it up there. Giancarlo Stanton being one of them.
Yeah, true. But yeah.
It was like a Stanton shot. It had that that it almost seemed like a line drive, but just bigger. Much bigger. And then just the wild ending where we all were that's it. It's going to tie
sure.
Then there was a throwout at home, and it was just, it was great. It was a really good game.
Seth Lugo had the bases loaded at one point, too.
Yeah, and he struck out a guy to get out of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seth Lugo pitched the eighth, and then Edwin Diaz pitched the ninth, and we had a two-run lead going into the ninth, and Edwin Diaz gave one of the runs back, and then I think it was Colton Wong hit, a bloop, down the left field line that just evaded, perfectly blooped between Conforto and McNeil. And then McNeil threw the guy out at home because Jack Flaherty, the pitcher, was pinch running. I'm convinced if they hadn't run out of position players to pinch run, if it had been an actual fast position player, he would not have been able to tag him out at the plate.
But it would have been close. And I will McNeil's throw was money
target.
Just nailed it perfectly. That was a really good game, and terrible game, but a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know what? If they win that game, I'll take it every time.
Yep.
Well, maybe not without the Syndergaard injury.
Yeah, right. Minus the Syndergaard injury.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That whole part. Like you said, it was a pretty bad game, except wonderful.
Yeah. And we'll reiterate what Maggie said, just a great group of folks. And, especially given what we talked about in the segment today, I am so grateful to have my little online community of people that I trust and call my friends. And it's just really great to be able to enjoy a game with them, get to have a few beers with them. It was really nice. So, yeah. Shout out to Baseball Prospectus for hosting the event. We really appreciate it. We had a lot of fun.
And they do it every year, and it's a great event.
Yep.
Watch our Twitter. I always will promote it when I see it come up, because I really think it's one of the most fun things that you can do. There's a panel at the beginning with it starts with whoever the GM might be at that particular moment. You never can tell. And GM will answer fan questions, and then Baseball Prospectus writers answer some questions too. And you get in early, so you always get whatever the giveaway is for that evening.
Yeah, we all got gnomes.
Without having to wait online for the ridiculous periods of time that people wait online for these things. So I would heartily recommend it to any and all humans.
And we got, and we not only did we get to hang out with our favorite Amazing Avenue and Baseball Prospectus people, but we also got to meet some friends of the pod too, like David and others. So, and gave us compliments about the pod. So we're so grateful. So it was nice hanging out with you and meeting all of you. So thank you so much for your kind words at BP Day.
Really and awesome. I'm glad that I got to meet Allison's parents, who are fabulous and so much here. Fun. And like, I hope they come to all the games.
Yeah, I met them last year, I think. They are adorable. I love her parents.
Linda, you'll get to hang out with them again because we're going to a game in late July. So, Maggie, you should come July 24th. Maybe we can have an entire Apodo, all three of us.
Okay, I'm not going to check my calendar right this moment while we're still recording, but I am going to check the calendar.
I think it's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday against the Padres. Yeah.
Okay, I probably can't make it, but I'll make another one, I promise.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Mine is the Friday night game. I missed the ending of the first game because we were stuck in traffic. But my brother's company does, like, an outing every year. So they get the Honda Club, which is in right field. It's next to the bullpen. Yeah. So, like, you're basically on the field. Like, Conforto's kind of standing right in front of you. And, so it's also kind of weird to see baseball from, like, behind. Like, the action's coming towards you instead of away from you. So yeah. It's kind of, yeah, so you're kind of seeing it from the player's perspective, which is kind of cool. But anytime a ball was hit on the infield, I had no clue if it was getting through, if somebody was fielding it, where the players were. And then you also do kind of lose the ball down the left field line because we're further back. So I just had to guess if the ball went out of the ballpark based on the crowd reaction. but like, you also see things you normally wouldn't see there. Like Robert Gazelman looked like he was freezing. He had his hood up. He had his hoodie on. He was kind of like, Rob, it's 70 degrees. It's not that bad. And then
reminds
you get,
me
like,
of Robert Gazelman's like weird like warm-up stretches. Remember that time there's a gif of him like slapping on the his hamstrings.
Like, dude, it's not that bad. Like, okay. Like a little breezy, but it's okay. But yeah, you get, you know, it's not that bad. Like, I think for $50 you get like unlimited food, you get soda and water.
I can eat $50 of food like nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really.
There's the like there's a bathroom in there. You get your own bathroom. There's TV.
I'd pay
there.
Extra just for that, to be honest.
So you don't have to wait in line for the bathroom. So it is nice. So if you like, this isn't an ad, but you know, if you want to have a company outing, have it at City Field.
Hell yeah.
But it was fun until Familia came in.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that part.
No, but the Mets did. At least they scored. Mats hit a home run, which was fun.
Oh, yeah, that is fun. That's very fun.
Pitcher dong is always good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's my first real-life pitcher dong.
Yeah, so, that's always fun.
Yeah, so that I can mark that
down. Hashtag pitchers who rake.
Yeah, exactly. Hashtag no G, no DH.
Hashtag no DH. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that was my walk-off win. Even though the game ended up being awful, it was still a fun night.
That's great. So fun times at Citi Field this past weekend were had by all, which is awesome. So that does it for this week's episode. Please subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, and rate and review the show. It really, really helps. In the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com to check out all of our fantastic content. I think that Jarrett Seidler might have a piece about Alonzo happening this week. He's our friend at Baseball Prospectus, who is now dropping in occasionally at Amazing Avenue, as well as our usual game recaps, news posts about all the myriad of roster moves the Mets are making at the time. And, you know, news posts as we always have every morning, analysis, etc. So go to AmazingAvenue.com for all of that. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can follow the show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Maggie?
at MagHugh162.
And you, Linda?
At Linda Servit.
Can follow all of us on Twitter. You can email the show, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. We'll have another mailbag segment soon-ish, probably. And yeah, in the meantime, original music for this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.